If you are going through a divorce, there's a pretty clear process for lots of it, like sorting out your joint bank accounts, your investments, and all that stuff. But there's a number of other accounts where things are less clear, like loyalty rewards accounts, and even like a shared iCloud account, for example. Laura Paris is a family lawyer at Shulman Law Firm, and she joins us now to talk about some of these other details, which you might not have thought about. Hello, Laura.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Bank accounts get sorted out. There's a whole process, division of assets, all that kind of stuff. But let's start with this first example. How do loyalty programs get included in the division of assets?
So loyalty programs are considered the exact same way you'd consider any other asset. It is considered property and it is subject to division. So if
how do they value my 3,000 points or 300,000 points?
So it isn't considered as a cash value. It's actually considered at the source. So if it's Aeroplan miles, for example, you would split the Aeroplan miles in half. If you have 100,000, 50,000 would go to your spouse.
Okay, so that one's simple. Some of the other accounts that you talk about are things like an Apple ID or an iCloud account or even our Amazon account if you pay for Amazon Prime. Why is that relevant? Why should we have those on our radar if one is going through a divorce?
So you want to be careful, you know, when you are separating, there's obviously a separation of two people who were living a life together. And there's certain things when you're taking different paths in life that you want to keep confidential or keep private, that your ex-spouse doesn't need to have that information about you. So when you're looking at other accounts such as an Apple ID or even, you know, something like an Amazon account, it's more to protect that confidentiality. And, you know, something like an Apple ID, for example, can actually be used if you have access to, you know, your ex-spouse's Apple ID. You have the ability to send messages on their behalf, send emails on their behalf. And that could actually convolute issues that you're dealing with in the context of your separation and lead to, you know, further incurrence of legal fees.
You could also buy the entire season of This Is Us and make them pay for it, which would be like $40.
You can do that.
$40. What about something like Amazon Prime, for example? It's a shared resource. You get books, you know, shipped to you for free if you have Prime, and you get to watch a whole bunch of TV series. Is that something that you need to, you know, divide up and set up your own?
You know, it's not necessarily, if you make the decision to maintain an account like that together, really the only thing that you would need to focus on is, you know, what credit card you're using when making these purchases and who's paying the annual fee. If it's something, you know, that you each are amicable and able to maintain that account together and it makes sense for you from a financial perspective to split those, you know, the annual fee for Prime or whatever it may be, you can make that choice. But for the most part, when you do separate, you are beginning to live a separate life. And if you need to start with, you know, accounts and separating those accounts, that's you know, one step to take to do that.
I'm sure things like changing the beneficiary on life insurance is on a checklist somewhere. You make sure that you do that. But what about removing a spouse's ability to trade in your investment account on your behalf, which is very common and you don't really think about it. It's not like a reminder that that exists.
You absolutely would want to take any sort of permissions that a spouse has in terms of your finances off. So, I mean, even if they have access to your online, you know, online banking, they may have the ability to make a transfer. They may have the ability to make a payment, even though they are not named on that account. The fact that they have access to your login credentials gives them the ability to, you know, make those transactions, which then will be difficult for you to prove was made by them because the transactions are being made in your name.
Tell me about passwords. I take this deep inhale of breath because many people in couples know the passwords of their spouse for lots of very good reasons. Do you have to go and change every single one?
I mean, you definitely would focus on the accounts that you are, you know, you use most often. The ones that could be potentially damaging to, you know, any sort of family law proceeding. We focus a lot on social media accounts and advising clients to change passwords related to their social media accounts. And the reason being is that social media creates, first of all, if there's certain posts that, you know, someone could, again, make on your behalf that they may then try to use against you in a family proceeding. Or there's also access to, you know, direct messages, things that maybe you're trying to keep private that, you know, a spouse could have access to. So definitely in that sense, when it comes to social media, we do advise, you know, to start changing those passwords
You've said that you really need to be concerned about your credibility because it can cost you. That was the phrase that really struck me. What would be an example of that?
So, for example, you know, using a Facebook account, and if you have someone who has access to your Facebook account and perhaps makes a post on your behalf, and then tries to use that post against you in the court proceeding. So, for example, maybe the post is something that's degrading against the opposite party. And they then use that in court to say, well, this is someone who's, you know, slamming me on social media. Maybe they're trying to use that as a way to say that you're not a fit parent. And then while it may not actually, you know, make a difference in terms of the final determination of that particular issue, what it does is it almost throws a wrench into the determination of the issue. And it adds an extra step that you have to take, another explanation that you have to make, which of course relates in further legal fees, which, you know, we all want to minimize as much as possible.
You want to earn them, but your clients want to avoid them. That's fair. You've got four steps to protecting your online reputation. Make a list of all joint accounts, remove personal info from accounts you no longer wish to use, purge and delete, don't call out your ex on social media. Okay, that one seems to make sense. On the purge and delete, what's the thinking there?
So social media accounts, you know, people can have them for years. And things change in your life. You know, as you grow older, maybe before you weren't, when you first opened, you know, or activated your social media account, you were a teenager. You know, you were an early adult and you didn't have children. You had different views on life. There may be posts that you made at that time that you don't want coming out in you know, your family law proceedings now, because they may paint a picture of you that isn't actually an accurate reflection of who you are today.
Right.
So when it comes to purging and deleting, the model that we have with our clients is, if you're not comfortable with this particular post being presented before a judge, get rid of it.
I see. So you're talking about what could have been posted a decade ago that I wouldn't even know is on my social media account, because unless it popped up as a memory,
exactly,
I wouldn't know. So you recommend people go back and do due diligence through all their social media.
Absolutely.
Because of how it might be perceived in court.
Absolutely.
And this is admissible. This stuff's admissible.
It is. Yeah, it is.
What is the number one thing that you wish couples knew about this realm here of separating accounts that they don't know? What is the number one piece of advice you would give to people who are embarking on the journey, the divorce journey?
When it comes to, social media accounts and things that people post online, people tend to believe that it'll have a lot more of an effect on the way that their file, you know, transpires in the final determination or the final settlement than it actually does. Listen to your lawyers, focus on the issues that matter, and don't try to convolute things or, you know, throw mud just for the sake of doing it.
Laura, thank you very much.
Thank you for having
May
me.
None of my listeners ever need you or your services. Laura Paris is a family lawyer at Shulman Law, and she was talking about some of the accounts that you need to be thinking about in a much more nuanced way.